This is case 66185, Hubbard versus State. Justice Perigary is unavailable at this time. He will review the arguments and participate in the decision. With that, if counsel for Hubbard is ready to proceed.
Yes,
sir. Mr. Jackson?
Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm Patricia Erickson, and I, along with Brett Percival, who is trial counsel, represent Mr. Corey Hubbard before this honorable court. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for my time of rebuttal. As this court is well aware, you entered an order in October of 2016 asking for supplemental briefing on the issue of whether the district court abused his discretion by admitting a Washington conviction for burglary into the evidence when Mr. Hubbard had not placed his intent at issue or that he had made a mistake at any time. I'd just like to get the back end out first. The state takes a position that they can raise a mistake. That's an affirmative defense. It can't be raised by the state. It's a challenge to the accused person's state of mind and mens rea at the time of the crime. So it's an equivalent of intent. It's a part of intent.
Was there a limit? Was there like a Tavares instruction in there requested by the defense or even by the court?
The judge gave a Tavares instruction, but it was for absence of mistake, intent, and
was it identity? Was it an issue? He was shot or something, and he claimed he wasn't at where this.
They didn't argue it as identity. It wasn't argued that way. It was argued primarily. I mean, it's been raised as identity and
In your brief, opening brief, page 13, you say the district court admitted Ms. Davis's testimony as evidence of identity. And then you continue in that same paragraph, therefore, admission of Ms. Davis's testimony as evidence of identity was a manifest abuse of discretion, etc. I understand that our briefing order specifically asked you to focus on mistake and intent, so you may have gotten wrong-footed a bit by our order, but I think the district court's order actually did include identity, at least going by your brief.
Motion that the state filed said that they wanted intent and they wanted the other bad act to come in, the conviction, because Mr. Hubbard was charged with burglary while in possession of a firearm and that they needed to establish his intent to steal items inside once he got inside. At the first hearing, it was at the second hearing that the court decided whether to allow that conviction to come in. At that time, the judge indicated that he was going to admit the Washington crime to prove absence of mistake, and then the state chimed in and said, "Judge, you should also have it for motive and intent." So it was never introduced as identity.
So your opening brief to this court was mistaken?
No, I had at page 8 of my opening brief, I specifically state, when the state asserted that the Washington conviction should also be admissible regarding motive and intent, the judge amended his ruling to include those purposes as relevant basis for admission of the Washington conviction at page 8.
What about page 13 of your brief? There's no record cite to the record, so I'm hard-pressed, but you say in your brief, unless I'm...
At page 13, it is discussion of what the defense was at trial, that Mr. Hubbard himself was the only witness for the defense.
But you then say the district court admitted this testimony as evidence of identity. That's your brief.
At what page? I'm sorry.
13. Your brief was filed August 5th, 2015?
April 17th, 2017?
No, August 5th, 2015.
So you're talking about the direct appeal brief?
I am.
The supplemental brief?
I'm talking about the direct appeal brief.
Okay. Well, I have to say that the issue of the other bad act should come in for at that point was more of a discussion of the reasons why it was dissimilar. And that to be similar for identity purposes, it needs to have a modus operandi, a specific ID, you know, part of the crime that can identify that person. And the burglary facts are told to identify anybody.
Well, Ms. Erickson, if I could interrupt you, the issue that Justice Pickering is asking you about does seem a little bit confusing as to what it was the judge admitted it for. In the record at page 86 and 87, district court is quoted as saying that the evidence is being admitted to eliminate the possibility of mistake and to prove motive and intent. There's no reference in the judge's statement or into the prosecutor's response to identity.
Identity was never argued at the district court.
But I understood that in closing argument, and maybe you or your opponent could address this, the state did address identity in its closing argument. Is that the case? Because if so, that would seem to have gone beyond what was the limited purpose under which the court had admitted the evidence. So perhaps you folks could clear up this seeming discrepancy in the record.
Well, unfortunately, I was a little misled, I guess, by your order for what we were supposed to be doing. It was for the purposes of intent and absence of mistake. So I haven't really gone and looked at what the argument was. If the state made that argument, then obviously it was outside the bounds of what the district court had found, were the relevant purposes. Although I have to say that the judge did not enunciate any facts as to why any of those bases was relevant to Mr. Hubbard's case.
Does seem to be missing from the judge's ruling, at least on the transcript, and there was no written order, correct?
No, there was no written order. It was done just before trial. And then it was presented in trial with an objection. But the other crime witness didn't never see Mr. Hubbard. She just testified against him because she was in the house and never saw him enter.
Ms. Erickson, I know there's a bunch of issues here today, and we're limited in time. And I'm sorry for taking this out of order in your presentation, but let's say we agree with you that there's error in allowing this bad act to come in. Why would it not be considered harmless?
Because as the Court of Appeals noted, this was not a case that was anywhere near a slam dunk. The state's brief identifies Mr. Hubbard, but he was not identified. During trial, there was one person who said he might be one of the guys that came in, 8 out of 10, and then at trial, that witness went even less. So, the facts are three guys got in the house, and one of them went upstairs and got shot. That person, maybe Mr. Hubbard, that was the state's position, and they never, but none of the facts ever identified him. So it was circumstantially him because there was a gunshot wound. But no, this was not a slam dunk. You know, this is who did it, I recognize them. There was a recognition of one of the co-defendants because he went behind the houses and was found in a garden at another house. And he didn't have any of the items on him. But Mr. Hubbard was not found at the scene. He ended up at the Short Line Market where he had a gunshot wound. So this was nothing like, okay, we picked him out, we know it's him. You know, this is a very circumstantial case. And I think the Court of Appeals rightly noted that. The state, you know, said it was Mr. Hubbard. But none of the witnesses said it was Mr. Hubbard. So that's why it would not be harmless error. It was very important.
Well, didn't witness KJ identify Mr. Hubbard?
I'm sorry?
Didn't witness KJ identify Mr. Hubbard?
He identified him 8 out of 10, and then at trial, he was pushed around a while. He didn't want to say who it was or how it was done, and the state took him as a hostile witness.
But KJ was in the residence when this incident occurred.
Right.
And there may have been some issues involving the individual's perception or whatever, but at least that was the testimony the jury heard.
True.
I mean, you said nobody identified him, but that's not accurate.
I'm sorry, Justice. No, what I meant to say is there was no 100% identification. And the testimony during trial by KJ was not like, yes, I know it was him, 8 out of 10. It fluctuated, and the state was not happy with him. And they cut at the end of his testimony and made him come back the next day. And I don't believe that his testimony would be sufficient for this court to find it to be harmless error.
Well, in any event, that would turn on an identity question, not an intent, motive, or mistake question.
And true, that would be. But in identity, they have to prove, the state has to prove, that there's like a fingerprint, that there's something about these crimes that identifies the specific defendant. Not just that this was a house that was broken, and there was, you know, people came, three guys came in, you know, they took the guns, they, you know, they had guns, they took the items. The difference is between, this is a residential burglary that can happen on a daily basis. There was nothing distinctive about it at all. Nothing. So therefore, it couldn't have been used for identity anyway. Even if the court had wanted, if the court had identified that as a basis for admitting it. It was not a signature mark. There was nothing that made it that similar. In fact, there was dissimilarities. I have 4 minutes left. Do you have other questions you'd like me to ask now?
Thank you. Mr. Stillman?
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, Charles Stillman on behalf of the state of Nevada. The district court did not abuse its discretion in this case in admitting the prior bad act evidence because in specific intent crimes, intent is at issue automatically and doesn't have to be put at issue by defense. The majority of federal circuit courts hold this to be true. The Fourth Circuit in U.S. v. Gardner and U.S. v. Sanchez, as referenced in the respondent's briefs.
Mr. Thoman?
Yes.
Then how does that evidence go to show intent other than propensity?
The intent here, is that this bad act evidence goes to the intent because it's especially probative where the defendant is charged with a specific intent crime, that the similarities in the burglaries in the state of Washington, and in this case, and as counsel has referenced to, ties in with the absence of mistake. His explanation was initially...
Well, specifically, you mentioned it goes to intent, not absence of mistake, but his intent. How does this, other than propensity, other than the allegation that he's done it before, presumably with the requisite intent, other than propensity, how does this move the ball on any of the factors for which a bad act could be admitted here?
Because it's more probative than prejudicial in the situation in a specific intent crime where intent is automatically at issue. I would note that in the Sixth Circuit Court in U.S. v. Johnson, where the virtue of the elements of the crime charged, the government has the affirmative duty to prove specific intent. You may do so with other bad act evidence. This is a federal case, obviously, through federal rule 404B, which we referenced in our brief. This is particularly important because the legislative intent in crafting NRS 48.045, our prior bad act statute, was to follow, quote, insofar as possible, the federal code. This was during Senate Bill 12 in 1971. Further, the language of 48.045 was taken directly from the federal rule.
So what are the facts of the Washington burglary?
The fact of the Washington burglary was the defendant, along with two other individuals, one targeted a residence as opposed to a business, drove to the residence and parked the vehicle directly in front of the house. I'm not saying it was a effective technique, but it was similar because that's exactly what happened in this case. They knocked on the door prior to entering. This wasn't a situation where they looked to go through a window without first ascertaining whether or not an individual was present in the residence. Once inside, it was ransacked, property was stolen, and ultimately they fled the residence in the vehicle driven to the scene parked in front. Additionally, the victims in both cases were unknown to the defendant. This was a case of a stranger burglary where they targeted the home.
How does a district attorney, a deputy district attorney, or a chief deputy district attorney determine whether to put evidence of other crimes into a trial, knowing that it becomes an issue on appeal almost automatically?
Well, I think when In this case, it helped bolster the state's case because intent was at issue and the absence of mistake. Appellant stated that he was first shot while, just accidentally shot while he was walking down the street. Second, he was, at trial, he testified that he was shot during a drug deal gone wrong, and inexplicably the placement of the gunshot wound specifically to the upper left shoulder, which is what the victim testified to where he shot the perpetrator, matched up. So in absence of mistake.
How does that go to mistake for the alleged crime that was committed?
Because he put the absence of mistake at issue by claiming these other means by which he was injured, and specifically the same injury which the victim told police that they had inflicted upon the perpetrator.
It seems separating out the crime and the actual act. There's no mistake. Somebody walked in, pointed a gun, and took something. Now, I don't think you clarify that with showing us another crime. The real issue in this comes down to, is he the one? How does that go to that ultimate question that the jury has to determine? Is he the one?
Well, first off, Justice, I believe that in the questions to counsel at the onset, the district court's order was as to intent and absence of lack of mistake. I think what we have here is a situation where you have the defendant who fits the physical descriptors, was identified by KJ, as Justice Hardesty mentioned, is within a reasonable geographical stretch from the location of the crime, has the exact same injury that was inflicted upon him by one of the victims. And I think this goes to show when the defendant testifies that he was actually shot during a drug deal gone wrong and he was nowhere near the area, that this does go to absence of mistake.
Whose mistake as to what? I mean, what's the theory? I don't get it. I'm sorry.
The theory being that this gunshot wound was inflicted upon the defendant by the victim during the course of this crime, not during some random act walking down the street.
So where's the mistake?
It's the simple fact that he is concocting a story. The opponent has claimed that he was accidentally shot and that this wasn't some mistake. This happened during the perpetration of a burglary. That's the state's position.
Can I ask you also, Mr. Hubbard did testify in the trial.
He did.
Did you impeach him with the felony conviction?
He was, and he admitted to it. So the second prong of Big Pond was essentially stipulated to, that it was proven by more than clear and convincing evidence. It was a conviction, and he was impeached, and the defendant admitted.
But by then, the defendant was always, Davis had already testified to the defendant's burglary in Washington, so we don't know whether the defendant would have taken the stand or not had that not been admitted, right?
That is correct. It's impossible to tell from hindsight.
Yeah.
I would note that...
Can you clarify for us what the state of the record is on using this evidence for identity? Candidly, it looks more like an identity, like the purpose was to establish identity more than mistake.
Well, the purpose and the court's ruling at the district court level was for the purpose of intent and absence of mistake. I do believe in hindsight, there is an element of identity here, but I still believe that was the original purpose that the district court wanted.
I guess my concern about the intent is kind of what Justice Stiglitz alluded to. I understand the case law, but you can't introduce propensity evidence. That's clear under our law for bad acts. So that intent/propensity seems to be a fine line, you know, like that. The identity seems to be a clear element under 48045 that Justice Pickering pointed out that may have been a way to get this in with the Tavares limiting instruction. So I just wonder about this intent piece of it. That does concern me.
And Justice, I would note in the Tenth Circuit, U.S. v. Tan, they also state that because specific intent cannot be inferred the same way that general intent can be from the charged conduct, that other evidence, other bad act evidence is especially probative when the defendant is charged with a specific intent crime. And that's what the state stands behind us, the reason behind this.
But is that such a large exception that any time you have a specific intent crime charge, say burglary, that if the guy has a prior burglary, that that's automatically admissible? Is that your position, that that's what those federal cases are holding?
Not at all. I believe it's a very narrow distinction for specific intent crimes in particular. And in this case...
Well, how is it narrow? Let's say I have a defendant. He was convicted 5 years ago of burglary, residential burglary. And then he is charged with, 5 years later, another burglary. And it's a specific intent crime. What do you need to get the prior burglary in?
The criteria as laid out in Big Pond. You have to show that the bad act is relevant to the crime charged for purpose other than propensity, and that's submitted.
Okay, so how does the prior burglary show intent? Or do you need more to that prior burglary to get it in?
I believe you need to fit all three factors enumerated in Big Pond, which also includes the probative value. And I would reassert that the probative value in specific intent crimes of intent is even more so amplified in cases where specific intent is required to be proven and can't be inferred, such as general intent crimes like the robbery.
I understand the importance of it, but what I'm trying to understand is, does the prior have to have any... Can it just be a prior burglary, and because the subsequent burglary charge requires specific intent, it automatically comes in? I'm not hearing from you what else there needs to be.
Similarities, Your Honor, or Justice, and I've delineated those similarities, as Justice Cherry had previously asked, that the defendant committed the offense in both cases with two other individuals. It was a residential, it was a home that was targeted. They drove to the residence, parked directly in front. They knocked on the door prior to entering to ascertain if there was individuals present. Once inside, it was ransacked, and specifically tangible property was stolen of value, and fled the residence, and the vehicle that was driven to the scene parked in front. And in both of these circumstances, a year apart, it was individuals that were strangers to the defendant.
But isn't that towards to identity rather than anything else?
I'd submit to the court it also goes to intent because of the specific intent basis that a burglary charge carries with it.
Mr. Thoman, yes. With respect to the balancing that the court would have to engage in any event, couldn't we have to consider the fact that nobody in the trial meaningfully was challenging the intent of the perpetrators? There was no meaningful challenge that the people, whoever that may be, whether that's a defendant or not, that entered that home with guns drawn or intending to go in there to rob the residence. Isn't that the factor that the court has to consider when it does this balance of the probative versus the prejudicial effect of that evidence?
And Justice, I believe that goes back to the specific intent issue that I'm trying to distinguish here, because in U.S. v. Mazzanti in the Seventh Circuit, intent is held to be automatically at issue in specific intent crimes, whether or not the defendant puts it at issue.
But whether it's an issue or not, this court still has to determine whether or not it's more prejudicial, correct? And we still have to balance whether or not it should be admitted, whether there's any relevance or not.
And it is an element that's required to be proven by the state, and that's why I believe that the specific intent body of case law jurisprudence shows that this is especially probative rather than prejudicial with these regards.
Sir, in the absence of that prior act evidence, is it your understanding that you would have lost that trial because there would have been no evidence of intent of the perpetrators? Is that what you're suggesting?
I can't get into the minds of the jury, Justice, but I like the case and the way that the deputy handled it, specifically as to getting into this prior conviction. I don't second guess. I would also like to note specifically that in the cases of State v. Newman and State v. Honkanen, I believe they're easily distinguished from this case. In those cases, they were child abuse cases where the defendants admitted to committing the criminal charged acts. However, they raised other defenses. Thus, the absence of mistake was not at issue. In this case, the defendant claimed he wasn't even at the scene of the crimes and provided two alternate explanations as to how he was shot, specifically in the same region that the victim testified to.
So, sir, is the mistake you're talking about, is that Hubbard was mistaken about the fact that he did it? I mean, what is the mistake?
The means by which he was.
The means by which he was shot?
Yes.
That's just circumstantial evidence of whether or not he's the perpetrator. How is that evidence of a mistake?
It's evidence of the absence of mistake in that what he was claiming didn't match up with what the state's case was. U.S. v. Wood, the Fourth Circuit that the state cites, adopted the doctrine of chances with regard to admitting prior act evidence to establish lack of accident allows the jurors to consider objective improbability or a coincidence. And I would submit that that was what they were presented with the testimony and prior inconsistent statement of Appellate Hubbard.
So the fact that he had done it before made it more likely that he was mistaken that he hadn't done it on this occasion.
I don't believe that's what I'm saying, no.
Okay. Are you familiar at all with United States v. Merriweather of the Sixth Circuit?
I don't have that listed in my notes, Justice. There being no further questions, I'll submit the matter.
Thank you. Ms. Erickson?
Yes, Justice. The state is basically told you because we've charged a specific intent crime, intent is at issue. That's not accurate. This court, in 1993, in Taylor versus State, specifically decided a specific intent case, Loomis with a child under the age of 14, and said that neither the fact that it was a specific intent crime nor the fact that the defendant had entered a not guilty plea made intent at issue. Intent was not at issue in that case, and intent is not at issue in this case. And it is not a mistake, as Justice Stegler noted. The mistake, as an example, would be, I left a party to go and pick up my iPhone and my iPad. I thought I went into my own house, and I picked up the iPad and the iPhone, and I walked out of it. But I was so drunk, I was actually in my neighbor's home. Now, that's a mistake. I made a mistake about my home. I made a mistake about what those items were. They weren't mine, but that is a mistake that the state could then ask, you know, put in absence of mistake, showing, you know, that this kind of crime had been committed before, but not in this manner. This case is not mistake. The fact that he may have been shot differently, the case law that this court has promulgated always looks at what is the defense. The defense is, I didn't do it. I wasn't at the house. I didn't go inside. I never saw these people. I never seen these pictures. I don't know where the house is. Basically, if the jury convicted him, he had admitted the intent of those crimes. He had not put them at issue. If he went in and said, no, I didn't mean to do this, or I got shoved in to do that, or there was, you know, some duress going on, then that would be different. But this is a defense of, I didn't do it. And so how can the state then introduce absence of mistake evidence or intent evidence? It becomes propensity evidence. And
I think they're kind of mixing up mistake and identity, because wasn't there some identification of the defendant, and they're arguing that it was a mistaken identification, that the defendant wasn't there, and he could not have, and he didn't do it. To me, that's more identity, but I'm thinking, witness, that's how it seems to me. Could you comment on that?
There might have been a statement, you know, there may have been a statement that said that, maybe. But the defense, clearly through the testimony and the closing argument, was that Mr. Hubbard did not do these crimes. He didn't mistakenly do them?
No, I understand that, but aren't they saying that it was a case of mistaken identity?
No, it's not mistaken identity, because in the case, the only person that possibly identified him was KJ. And if the court looks at the transcript with regard to the first closing statement, the state itself recognizes that Kenneth didn't really testify, and the facts of the case were not really there. Darnie said there were three guys, one taller, lighter, that was Willie. The other two were darker. Darker and heavier was the one that knocked on the door, and that's for Darnie. That's what Darnie said. She's the one that answered the door. Darker, heavier one that knocked and asked for Daryl. Darker, heavier one went upstairs, so it's consistent with the description of Corey Hubbard. Kenneth, this is the quote, now when dealing with Kenneth's testimony, I don't have time, Does it surprise any of you that the victim was before this crime, the only one that's positively identified in the photo lineup would be reluctant? My most important fact is this court cannot accept federal court's case law. Not a single one of the cases in federal court that I've seen starts with the discussion that other bad act evidence begins as inadmissible. None of them say that. And none of those cases say that at the admission of...
finish your thought.
I'm sorry?
Finish your thought.
Admission of the bad act evidence in our jurisdiction is heavily disfavored. We start with a totally different scenario as the admissibility level than they do in federal court.
Thank you. Court thanks counsel for both Mr. Hubbard and the state for the arguments presented this day. This matter is